When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's get Cordon. Try not Cordon. To picture the Hamster Dance website Cordon. While you do it.
I'm always Cordon and always thinking yes. of the Hamster Dance.
It's a problem.
Believe that.
I love the Hamster Dance.
Sick. I love the Kia hamsters.
Love those guys.
And they love music. And they also love driving in a Kia. Let's keep playing our game, shall we?
Bottom.
Oh. Things aren't going your way at all. Well, for this, I'll give you a choice. You can either, when the time comes, cast your vote for war. Or you can swear fealty to Orimar Vale.
I have to decide now.
Now's the time I'm making the offer. Now's the time you'll be picking your lot.
Can I ask you a sort of, I don't know, like lore question?
Yes.
Okay. So like technically right now, I think that whether he likes it or not, Travis has like pledged fealty to the Forest Queen.
Sort of. I think okay. The thing that we agreed on is you had bet in a way your life or your ability to die. And you lost that kind of intentionally because that was a part of your humanity that you were kind of willing to give up because you wanted at that point in your life to live forever. And you won all kinds of freedoms from the Forest Queen in that game. You kind of took her for a ride. Not only did you win things for you, you won things for the woodsman who entered the game and Gable, who was part of the game. You cleaned up on everything but this one little thing that was represented by that Okus, which eventually you stole back from her.
The reason that I ask is I thought that in some way I was still like in her service. Because I feel like in the past I forget what happened, but we made a tree grow somewhere to save us or something.
So this was the times that she has intervened in the past have always surrounded moments when you were about to die.
Okay.
The thing that I think is going on is literally you can't die unless she says that you can die.
Mm-hmm.
So every time you reach a point where you could die, she decides whether you'll live or die. Gotcha. Instead of you.
The reason that I asked was whether or not I could sort of pledge fealty to two different people or two different things. But if that's not the case, then
the answer in both cases would be yes. You'd just be beholden to two different agendas and they might conflict and you'd be in the middle of that.
Is there a specific time that she's talking about as far as going to war? Or is it just like
That's something that you don't know.
Whenever the vote comes up.
Yeah, and an important thing for you to think about when making these choices is that this person might have an agenda. If you'd like, you can make a hard knowledge adventuring roll with a blue die because you're 200 years old.
Okay.
To see if you, or and actually for knowledge adventuring, it's going to be daunting. For knowledge forbidden or lore, it will be hard. And no matter what, you'll have a blue die.
Oh, well, then I will do forbidden. Okay. That is one success.
Holy shit. So, I'm going to ask you how you know this. The Morrigan, for lack of a better term, is or was a luminary. She is a figure that represents war, which is a thing that doesn't really exist anymore. It's more complicated than that. I think in her time, in your time with the Forest Queen, you had to entertain other luminaries, you know? So you were the Forest Queen's plaything. You were a display piece. You were something that the Forest Queen used to entertain other luminaries when holding a kind of court with them. So now in your memory, like, you can connect the person in front of you to that person. The difference is, when you saw her in the past, she had a different face. The facts that you know about her is that she is connected to war. She has three masks, and she told you that one of her masks is broken, one does not fit, and the other is worn by another.
Okay, here's my like sort of out of character thoughts. And I think it can go one of two ways. Either pledge fealty to Orimar because we're trying to do him a solid anyway. And we're, you know, I think that in general, up until a certain point, will pretty well align with what I'm trying to do with my life until a point when I think it won't. The other thing is, which I'm leaning towards, is I will happily vote for war so long as I'm also the one tallying the votes.
That is such a fucking Travis Matigo thought.
Fuck off.
That's
which I kind of love.
Pretty
okay, then
cool.
I'll do that one. I'll do that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's already done it once, yeah.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. It's so narratively perfect, and this is exactly the sort of supernatural brinksmanship that we should come to expect from Travis. So, yeah.
When the time comes, I will vote for war.
She smiles. She smiles bright and vicious as freshly spilt blood. And we cut over to the montage where now things are going good.
Wind it tighter, be a fighter, and we're not going home till the war is done.
First question I have is, of course, to Tyler. Tyler, how is winding the banjo supposed to go?
It is a slow process. By taking your time, the tension is more evenly distributed, and by going slow, that's the way to wind it.
Liz, what about moving baskets?
Yeah, what's the lesson here?
I think the lesson is, from the very beginning, he just wanted them to move them one at a time. Just like, pick up the basket, put down the basket. It's not that hard. And I think he implies as much as like, sometimes it's not that hard. And so Cable picks up the last basket and puts it up and claps their hands, shakes them free from dust, suddenly stops and feels someone somewhere is being a bad friend. And then they snap out.
Hoist it higher, start the fire, and we're never going to finish what we've just begun.
We cut to Orimar, who has his, like, again, one of the things that he was struggling with the challenge of these complicated clothes is that he does not have full range of motion or, you know, full and easy control over every part of his body. But the lesson here is the movements that you need to do to move through these complicated garments and put them on correctly are not movements that all depend on stuff that you're doing. It is moving with the clothing and allowing the clothing to move around you. So even though Orimar's movements are still kind of stiff and like only move in certain ranges, like a lot of it feels like he is stabbing in a fight or something and not quite moving the way you would move to put on a shirt. He has learned how to put what force he can exert in certain ways and areas to allow the clothes to fall around him. And he can kind of fluidly move in and out of these garments. So he has learned that lesson. Now we come to the group lesson with this parachute.
Strike a bargain, blow, strike the target. The metal in the wind is a deafening sound.
And what does it look like as you have nailed it?
I feel like, at least the group section, it feels like once the person has left and the rest of the group has redistributed the weight, I feel like then it becomes just letting it fall, letting it fall, letting it fall until right before impact, and then we whip it, and that gives us enough kick up to then just touch down very smoothly.
Perfect.
Twist it higher, start the fire, and we're never gonna stop till we're off the ground.
Let's cut back to Travis. I'll warn you before you make your next choice that if you truly are a man of ill fortune, which it seems that you might be, once you pick the last card of mine, I'll ask you to do the task, and the other lessons and gifts that I could bestow on you will blow away. So I guess what I'm saying is, be lucky.
I suppose I don't really have a choice.
Four cards left, and we'll arrange them north, south, east, and west.
North.
It's the changeling. Wow.
Fuck off.
Wow.
Ugh.
Well then, now it's time that I tell you one of your own secrets. And I'm curious, what don't you know that you'd like to know about yourself?
Can I ask a question? This is a question for James, the man.
Mm-hmm.
Can I ask a question about Margaret's relationship to me?
I think so.
Okay.
You just have to frame it in relation to yourself.
How did Margaret find me again?
You're destined to be together.
I can't That's have a Hancock how... with everyone.
You're in one of the most powerful and elemental stories that has ever graced the world. You're playing a role. It's not possible to miss your cue. When the first story broke, she had to work very, very hard to break it. And she can only break it in a particular kind of way every time.
If I'm playing this role, and there's a luminary, a changeling luminary, is that me?
We're not so different, you and I. Now then, will you keep playing?
What's the count right now? Travis knows, but Johnny can't.
Two bad, one good.
Fuck.
No, I'm sorry. Two good, one bad.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's only been three?
Yeah. There were five good things and four bad things. So, you know, the odds were in your favor to begin with. It's kind of wild how much bad luck you came across in the first place.
South.
She draws the bounty. Well, this works out in your favor. I will show you the way to transform on command. Once again, she sweeps her hand over your Okus. And how does it feel to learn this?
I think that when Travis changes, I feel like in the middle, during the pain, when he's like halfway between, I think that there is a point when he's sort of more of the animal that he's going to become than like the person. And some of the like awareness of being a person leaves briefly, and he sort of perceives the world as an animal, and he doesn't think like a human anymore. It's just like the instincts and the thoughts of an animal. And then once like the transformation's complete, he, you know, is then like a man, like in the shape of an animal. But I think there's like that brief moment where he's an animal. And I think this feeling is sort of like flipping through a bunch of pages of a book really fast and feeling these sensations of being all of the different animals and losing that sense of being a person.
Mm. I will say, I'm going to put some caveats on it. I will say part of this knowledge depends still on cycles. You cannot fully cheat out a cycle. So what this will let you do is you have 12 hours in a day that you need to be a man and 12 hours that you need to be an animal. That cannot change because that is part of an accord that you have with the Forest Queen that is absolutely inflexible. However, you don't have to always be a man during sunrise or always be a man during sunset. How you divide those up are going to be up to you. I just need one more caveat. What do you need to do in order to make this transformation? Because we have tried to let you do this multiple times, and each time you've rolled so bad and it's always gone just terribly for you. So clearly that indicates to me that you have been missing something. What's that thing?
I feel like this is maybe something, and if this does not line up with your thoughts, let me know. But I feel like this is something that, like, you know, kind of like you said, this like brinksmanship that these supernatural beings have. This is something the Forest Queen like knew could happen. Mm-hmm. Otherwise she would have been more explicit and been like, no, this is it. Like we've already messed around with this a lot. The 12 hours we've got, and I think it was sort of only, she knew it was only a matter of time before I figured this out somehow.
She didn't think it would take 200 years, maybe.
But I think that I do need, like, I need to, like, get her permission for it to happen each time.
Interesting.
Well,
yeah, what I'm going to say is the luminaries, as we have seen them, you can cast out to the luminaries in order to aid you in your tasks. And what you have to do in response is fulfill a bargain, a favor, a ritual, or something that is tantamount to the task that you are trying to do. when you were trying to fix the ship as you were pulling into Nordia, you had to satisfy the butcher in an awful and bloody way that really only Travis could afford to do. But it allowed you to pull your ship in safely without greater consequence. So in order to do these transformations, you are going to have to make offerings to the Forest Queen.
Cool.
Well, then, that brings us to two. One in your favor and one against. You could walk away as well. You've certainly put together a nice fortune for yourself, and I'll tell you, the last task that I have for you isn't easy. Though I'll also say I don't know that you wouldn't want to do it.
I'm trying to figure out how I can cheat.
It would be very Travis to cheat.
Especially when it's just the two left, you know? But it's tough as a snake.
Mm-hmm.
West.
The drought. Well, it seems like you're not a lucky man after all, Matago. And she sweeps her hand across the table, pulling away the last card, which we see was the maiden. But, as I said, and as you agreed to, there's one more task that lies before you, and it is not an easy one. Someday, you must have a child. I want you to be a father, Travis Matago.
Well, I suppose I have no choice.
You're right, you don't. It's a shame you didn't win that last boon. Might have been useful to you. But I can say I'm very happy that all these things, I believe, you'll be able to make useful to me. And that's it. That'll fulfill all me needs for you, Travis Matago. And I tell you this, Travis, William, Trevor McRib, whatever you prefer to be called, I have very high hopes for you. Both of us have been dealt an ill hand by the luminaries. Both of us have suffered an ill fate. But I think there's hope yet for us. Enjoy your day, Matago. I look forward to dancing with you tonight. With that, the Morrigan transforms. Her transformation is different than yours. Her form looks a little bit more shadowy, a little bit more smoky as she shifts from this kind of, you know, it's a little gothy, little bog witchy sort of look that she has into a crow that is wearing a dark green collar. It nods to you and then takes to wing and flies out of the window of the Uhuru. I would like to jump forward in time to sometime before the competition. Y'all have just finished training. The sun is about to set. After the sun sets, the horns are going to blow, and it will be time for y'all to get up for the tornado calling. Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the midroll. Heroes, the Kickstarter for Skyjack's Courier's Call Season 2 is live. Courier's Call is our all-ages spin-off of the Campaign Skyjack's podcast, and they had a tremendous first season. Not just producing twice as many episodes as we thought we were going to be able to, but picking up 6 Audioverse Awards. And I am so much more excited about the plans for season two than I was even about season one. We have a stretch goal that will literally double the length of season two and introduce a storyline Drew is calling Audrin Prom. I cannot tell you how excited I am to hear this. And I know that you're going to be excited to hear it too. So I encourage you to head over to bit.ly/skyjacksCC2. That's Skyjacks, the letter C, the letter C, and the number 2. That will bring you right to the Kickstarter page. Now, if you can't afford to back, you can also support us by sharing the project. The more people we've got sharing the project around, the more backers we'll get, which will translate into a better product overall. If you're somehow still on the fence, I recommend going to your favorite podcast app and searching for Skyjacks Courier's Call and listening to the first season. Drew, Allie, Palomi, and Aaron did incredible work, and I know they're going to knock it out of the park for season two. So once again, head to bit.ly/skyjacksCC2. A huge thank you to our backers on Patreon, as always. Without you, we wouldn't be able to make this show as amazing and occasionally heart-wrenching as it is. And if you need more Skyjacks, be sure to head over to our Patreon feed, where we're right now premiering weekly episodes of the Skyjacks Courier's Call and Jolly Jack crossover series, which features Margaret, who is sort of at the center of the plot of our show right now, even though she's not here. A huge thank you to everyone who supports us already, and everyone who's going to sign up to support in the future. Now, with all of that out of the way, let's get back in the sky! So let's jump to, where are you right before the competition? This is probably right before Travis is going to have to transform back. Everybody else is coming off having done a series of trials and training to prepare for the tornado calling.
Is there, out of character, is there something to, like, Huano's style is, from what I remember, in general, just like a little bit slower. Is there anything else that like we should be like keeping in mind to like, hey, I'm doing this and this is like Huano specific teachings?
Yeah, this is a great thing to talk about so that y'all can think of it while we're describing things. The idea is the tornado calling kind of dance competition is there's dancing, but it's also sort of a shifting obstacle course. If you could picture the marriage between parkour and capoeira, that's kind of what the tornado calling competition is. The style that you learned is slower and more deliberate. It's almost like the Tai Chi sort of version of that. It is about kind of feeling out where you need to be before you get there. So, you know, it's an unexpected thing. It is a wild thing to take into this kind of high energy competition, but, you know, it is definitely not something your opponents are going to anticipate. So when you are describing things, think about ways to set that up. So yeah, where do you find yourselves? Hanging out after a long day of training, meeting up with your good friend and snake, Travis Madigo.
If there's a convenient rooftop that looks over the arena?
Absolutely there is. Absolutely there is. And, you know, we had kind of set it up earlier that Jonnet was going to visit a local business called Tony Hawk's.
That's right.
To pick up his
still incredible
device. So, yeah, I kind of think Tony Hawk's Marengo Shop sort of, that there's a little rooftop that overlooks a good portion of the other attached hexes to the city, to the central city of Ungoni. And you can see that, like, this is an area where teens kind of gather to test their Marengos. And it is a good cheap seats place to watch a tornado calling competition. Beneath you, you can see this attached hex that is the, I guess the pitch the field, the stage, the battleground for the tornado calling. It is a complex sort of system of different platforms that are dragging and drifting in the wind behind the sort of trail that's being woven through the sky for Ungoni. As the hex moves in the sky, different parts of the platforms like shift and rotate, moving up and down, becoming stable and unstable. If it is something that you are not thinking of having to stand on at some point, it's quite beautiful. Otherwise, you know, it looks a bit like a whirligig, a weather vane, a kite drifting in the wind. It's unpredictable and certainly looks unstable.
So, Gable.
Yeah.
1 out of 10. How comfortable would you... You're strong. You think you could move one of these platforms during the match at all?
Like pulling it down and...
Pulling it down, pushing it up, smashing it to pieces.
Oh, well, I'm trying to decide how polite I want to be here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's fair.
I've done the math, and we're competing against quite a few teams that were much more experienced in a sport that we're only doing for the first time, so destroying their field in the process of trying to beat them, I feel, might not be the best way to go.
Is that a jerk move? Also,
I'm trying to decide, but because also, I don't plan on seeing any of these people again, so...
Well, if you're looking for my advice, hi, I'm Tony Hawk, the proprietor of Tony Hawk's Marengo Emporium. I try to picture life like a sports movie.
I love your voice.
Yeah, it's very Californian. Anyway, if you think of life like a sports movie, if you're the type of person to trash a field and leave it after you're done, you're probably going to lose the competition that you're trying to do.
Maintaining the moral high ground is very important to actually winning the game or losing the game, but... going with your chin held high at the end.
Yeah, if you're going to lose, you want to lose in the right way for the right reasons.
Okay. Thanks, Tony Hawk. That's good advice.
Thanks, Tony. Are you going to...
No problem.
Are you going to disappear till we have another question, or do you want to hang out, or...
Oh, no, I'm just... I'm working on your deck, my dude, so...
Hey,
just,
thanks!
Just over here doing whatever adjustments need to happen.
Real quick, so definitely destroying one of the platforms, it's a big no-no, won't do that, vetoing that idea. But what about, I know they're already moving on their own, has there been ever a competition where someone maybe guides it to maybe catch an ally or maybe to trip up someone else?
Oh, yeah, totally. That's definitely the sort of thing that you can do. Controlling the field is...
Could you please stop kickflipping while you're talking? It's very distracting.
The only way I know how to live is kickflipping.
Okay, all right.
Oh, in that case...
Hang on, I'm just going to test out my soaps for a quick second.
Yeah. Your soaps?
Yeah, do you remember soaps? They were thick sneakers that had these like plastic sort of middle bits, and you could use it to slide around on concrete.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
I seem to remember that they had a partnership with Sonic the Hedgehog as well. And I believe in Sonic Adventure, Mr. Hedgehog himself wore soaps that you use to grind on rails.
I'm trying to remember if that was
Sonic or Shadow.
Holy shit. That was a cross-branding like event.
Mm-hmm.
That's why those shoes were like that?
Well, I don't know if that's why the shoes were like that or if that's why the mechanic was in the game. Who's to say?
Well somebody shoes fucking dropped the ball because like I did not know about that.
Yeah,
that, and that, I love like, that game.
They are there to enable the sport of or activity of sliding across stuff. That is true for sure.
What?
Huh.
Were you just around a big community of people who owned soaps but did not do the thing that soaps were intended to do?
Yes, absolutely.
I didn't even know what a soap was. I never thought through the next phase of like, oh, this hedgehog can grind. Okay.
I just looked it up. It was Sonic Adventure 2. And Mr. Hedgehog wore soaps.
I have just Googled it. I am going to drop this little link in the
He's
chat
still
here.
Tony Hawk voice.
Tony, please. Thanks. I'm so glad we put Tony Hawk in our group chat.
Oh, good. A DeviantArt link.
I'm glad that Tony Hawk sent us a DeviantArt link.
Oh, man. I would kill to wear some soaps right now. To wear soaps and drink a soapy. Oh.
Travis, you're dissolving into and out of nothingness, a man out of time.
Wow. I guess I did clock that his shoes were different, but I just thought, you know, new year, new Sonic.
New year, Sonic, new year, new Sonic.
Isn't it always?
What were we talking about?
I couldn't tell you.
I think you had just determined that you can indeed make attempts to alter the terrain in the arena to suit your needs and help out your fellow competitors.
In that case, Jonathan, I am eminently comfortable being very much on the ground, pulling chains, attempting to push platforms every which way you want. I think the more I'm in the air, the less useful I will be because I don't feel like I've mastered the jumping and the flying.
Wait, you're feeling shaky on that too?
I did just learn it an hour ago.
Oh, well, the thing is, Juano sounded so confident when he was like, "You got it, you're gonna do it," and then he walked away. And I had so many questions and I didn't want to be the one to ask them.
They never include the Q&A in the sports montage, do they?
No.
That's usually the stuff that's covered in between moments of the montage. You assume that happened off camera.
We did not.
We didn't. It was all sports, all physicality, all the time.
And now my body is tired.
Definitely scheduled it poorly. But, so it's you and it's me. Who else is in our... Is it just the two of us?
Well,
are we the only two competing?
I think the captain's also...
Okay, yes, the captain's also here.
And Travis.
And Travis.
Am I doing it, though, or just kind of here?
That's completely up to you.
I'm a snake. Although...
As you say that, the sun starts moving down. I will ask, Travis, have you made any preparations?
No.
For your transformation?
Oh, for my transformation?
Yeah.
I don't...
Are you going transformation classic, which is transformation a la Pain? Or did you try to go out and get yourself some tea to maybe ease your passing?
I think I probably did not.
Interesting. I'm curious. So, like, I want to just very quickly, like, Travis, after, you know, you go through this sort of boon exchange, after the Morrigan has flown out the window, you are left there as a snake, knowing that you have committed to do certain things at the Morrigan's request, and that you now have potential for new abilities to transform at will, to transform without pain.
I think that I was kind of just lost in thought, slithering around, and I happened to bump into everyone talking about soaps, and I just gotta, you know, Travis loves the soaps.
So we get kind of like a moody and sort of atmospheric montage of Travis just slithering around Ungoni, staring off into the sky contemplatively. Because he did sort of learn the earth-shattering thing that the Forest Queen has changed fate, has broken the story that she was a part of. And one of Travis's major anxieties is that he didn't possess free will. So there's a lot to take in, and I can see Travis going for a bit of a moody stroll on his little snake belly, for sure. But you did sort of re-enter the scene in a grounding conversation about soaps, a thing that a snake would be very concerned with.
He's also...
The nice thing about a snake is you only need one soap.
He is his hope.
So yeah, with that, the sun, I think, is going to start going down.
If you'll excuse me for one moment.
Oh, Tony, shield your eyes. Come here. Tony, shh, shh, shh.
So what are you planning?
He's narrating the changes he's going through, though. It's still so awful.
No, but you tell me what mod you're making to my...
the scales are turning into skin.
How big is the wingspan of the flyer?
Oh, the little vestigial legs, the bones that a snake has are becoming real legs.
I really enjoyed the balance of this model. I think you really did a good job.
The fangs are sucking back into my head and becoming regular teeth.
Okay, so before you leave Ngoni, you are going to want to make sure that you collect all the letters for skate that are...
I can feel each article of clothing and thing in my pockets pressing out through my skin.
I didn't know that particular detail.
Yeah, that one's new.
Yeah, so a couple.
Tony knows all about this. He's in the group chat.
The worst part about this is that I do have to tie my shoes every time. They don't. That's the one thing. Even if I transform with my shoes tied, when I change back, they're untied. It's so inconvenient.
Very, very embarrassing. One of the Forest Queen's many tricks.
So Travis is now with you. We are at that golden hour just after the sun has passed down beneath the circumference of the earth, where all colors are at their truest, and you can see people from all over Ngoni making their way down to the hex where the tornado calling is going to be. You know, people in the colors of the four recognized schools from around Ngoni are sort of waving streamers. There are people calling out the cool fried foods and whatnot that they're selling in the stadium, and there's a general air of excitement.
What colors did we decide on? Was it purple and yellow?
Yeah.
Nice.
Was it purple and yellow?
Purple and gold? Purple and, yeah.
Purple and something.
I guess it was purple and gold. Okay, that's right. I was like, didn't we use purple and gold for something? Yeah, that's the Youngblood family crest. Oops. Colors. I forgot. Okay, well,
oh,
hey, whatever.
No.
That's the decision that we made in the past.
It's brown and darker brown.
It's poop colored.
Yeah, so with that, it feels like everybody said everything that they're going to say and asked all the questions that they were going to ask before this thing. I'll remind you, this is a role-playing game, and
Jonnet's going to track down some elephant ears.
Okay.
Yep. Like, you said fried goods.
Animal? Or
no,
like a food?
Like funnel cake.
Yeah.
Do you mean a beaver tail? Are there different names for it regionally?
What?
James, that is not what it's fucking
what?
Called.
What?
You're out of your fucking mind.
Okay. Okay.
How is
right.
an elephant
well,
ear made?
This podcast is over. I'm just
gonna. what is
beaver tail?
What does an elephant ear look like? Because I'm familiar with a fried dough food that has cinnamon on it called beaver tail.
It's the same.
Is this a different thing?
It's the same
fucking thing, y'all. I mean, the beaver tail looks like it has toppings, maybe.
It's got toppings, but it's also got a pattern that's kind of like a beaver tail, like sort of a check.
The shape is a little different, but this is the same thing.
It's the same.
Okay. You know, I will own up. I will own up to being the weird one in this situation. That seems like kind of a fucked up Colorado thing.
Apparently it's a Canadian thing.
Ooh.
Which makes sense.
That does make sense as a Canadian thing. I mean, I remember getting them in ski towns. I don't know. I got nothing for you. I'm wrong in this situation. I will own up to that. That's fine. Yeah, you get an elephant ear.
Beaver tail looks like it's a brand name. There is a chain called Beaver Tails that sells this, which I don't love that name.
Yeah.
After you're done hitting the slopes, you get some tail.
It sounds like a restaurant. Doesn't it?
Twin Peaks, Beaver Tales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There are franchising opportunities, though.
Mm. Ooh.
Is it we'll just, consider it.
Is it just the... Is it a storefront?
It's like a, it looks like a little shop that you go to and you buy a...
Wow.
A beaver tail. Okay, let's see if there are any in Colorado.
They're definitely in Colorado.
There is one in the Dells.
Ooh, Wisconsin.
So we have a chance to actually do this, to experience this.
You know, I always, when I'm looking at a map, Colorado, where it is, always kind of sneaks up on me.
When I look at a map, I'm like, roads.
None in Colorado, but perhaps you went to one in Salt Lake City.
No. Definitely there was one in Breckenridge, and I think one in Vail.
Well, they've since closed.
They might not be there anymore. Those are expensive towns to be in.
Huh.
You've not had the beaver tail at a county fair?
No.
Ah.
Okay.
The elephant ears are county fair exclusive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Actually, I feel like Jonnet is expecting an elephant ear, and he gets a beaver tail. And I'm just going with what the first one that I saw, it looked like Nutella and banana.
I think kind of what happens, Jonnet, is that you are expecting just the fried dough dusted with cinnamon sugar or whatever, but they keep handing you accessory toppings. It's like, and here are your turnips.
Okay. All right, I'm just gonna eat this now, and
here's your sour cream sauce. Don't forget your sour cream sauce.
Where does this go? Where does this go on this? Anywhere? And I'm putting this in.
And there are your chives.
What? Okay.
Johnny, can I have your sour cream sauce?
Just by itself?
Yeah, I just want the sour cream sauce.
Gable.
Because it's looser than a sour cream, so it's more of a sauce. And
okay.
For a lot of different things.
All right. And then we smash cut to Jonnet walking next to Gable, kind of eyeing the thing, taking tepid bites, and then he realizing, like, it's not bad. Not at all what I was thinking, but okay.
Travis would like to stop in a Tim Hortons.
Yeah. I do want to point out, you can get Timmy's almost anywhere on Sphere. That's just the thing that we do to be Canadian friendly in our world building.
Travis obviously goes with the double-double, the classic.
Mm-hmm. That's good. All right. So everybody before this athletic competition has eaten sort of a lot of fried food, which is all.
No, I just had my cup of sour cream.
That's right. Gable did sour cream shooters.
For you.
Jonnet had to go get four beaver tails so that Gable could get themselves four shots of sour cream.
Oh, we don't sell just the sauce. You do have to buy a beaver tail. Yeah, so you head down to the platform. There is kind of a locker room equivalent. You can hear a bunch of people in the stands. I like to imagine one thing that I do like about soccer in the UK is that there are little songs for like all of the various teams and whatnot. I do like the idea that fans in the audience are just singing their little songs to support their schools and whatnot. Everybody's having a good time out there while y'all are getting ready. Yes.
Is it too much of an ad to say that the stadium seats, they raise themselves depending on like where the majority of like your team or your section is? So it's like,
ooh. Aww.
I like that. Yeah. Why not? Why not? Oh, We're not doing this as a prestige TV show as far as we know. So, you know, we can throw whatever we want into the budget.
Nice.
Hell yeah, dude.
They're gold.
Extremely heavy.
They're solid gold and covered in hair, so if we ever had to animate them CG, it would be extremely expensive.
Solid gold covered in hair. How would we see the gold? Not my problem. Your HBO.
You're just asking a lot of questions and not giving answers, so it's not good collaboration.
Hewano is in the locker room. He's prepared everyone the equivalent of jerseys or whatnot. What is the uniform for this sport?
Would it make sense for them to be like loose enough tunics that you can like hold them and use them like parachutes?
Yeah, I like the idea of, you know, maybe them having like a little wingsuity element to them or some capes or something like that, because I think that would cut a very dramatic visual image if like there's some flowing fabric behind you. I do think it's not the sort of thing that's like so billowy that you trip over it, but I do think like there are elements of it that are billowy enough that it looks very cool as you are jumping back and forth between platforms and whatnot.
Let's see. Cape, but not a cape.
A half cape.
Half cape.
Half capes.
Half cape.
They got half capes. I love it.
When halfsies on a cape.
Just like, I don't.
We went Dutch on a cape.
Do you mean like a half length cape or a cape that's kind of on one side, like a Boba
that
Fett
one.
Thing?
Oh, yes.
Or is it at an angle?
Ooh.
An angle.
It's just the bottom.
That's just a skirt. That's a skirt.
So you've got your uniforms. They are sort of tunicky, billowy things. They have a half cape that, Liz, is that half length to one side? Is it an angle? You got to tell us. The
well,
fans
it's just
are
off
waiting.
On one side, like a dashing
It's off on one
prince.
Side.
Yeah.
I love it. It's cute. That. All right. So you are getting into uniform.
I think in the suiting up process, Jonnet peeps the uniform and is completely thrown by this half cape. I feel like he's not sure how it comes into play. He's kind of just walking around, just flicking it, seeing if maybe it might be removable. He goes to tug on it and then looks up at Hewano, and Hewano's kind of like giving him a no. And it's just like, okay.
What did we do all that training for?
Now I'm not sure. Now that I have this on, I'm not entirely... But he says that on the inside, and on the outside, he nods. And
when the time comes, you'll know what to do with it.
Oh, no.
Boy, it would be easier if you just said what the time was, though. When it came, so he would know, oh, it's happening.
And so instead of that, asking that important question, Jonnet is going to find some talcum powder and make sure he doesn't chafe during this this match.
Gotta talk up. Mm-hmm. That's huge.
Gotta talk up.
I would like to scope the competition, please.
You will be able to. How do I want you to be able to sort of peer across? I don't know if it's across the stadium or if it's in a locker room kind of next door. You know what we're gonna do? We'll just decide that people in Ungoni are much shorter than Gable, just like kind of collectively overall. So there's a divider put up between the two locker rooms. But if Gable goes on tippy toes, they can just like kind of peek over. You sort of peek over and you can see the blue and white and red uniforms, like little red detailings, but it's mostly blue and white uniforms for the crews from the Tempest Armada. And this, Liz, because you are the person who decided to spy a little bit, I will say, we do know that the people participating are definitely going to be Sifa, the Bandit Queen, and Ku Cullen. But I want to leave the other two spots kind of up to you. Who else do we see in there?
And they're people from the Tempest Armada.
Yeah, they can either be people from the Tempest Armada that we've already met, like Leo Toa, or, you know, you can do a make-em-up. You know, we have kind of Ku being sort of set up to oppose you, and we've got Sifa to go head-to-head with the captain. But everyone else, you know, we got Jonnet and Travis to think of.
Oh, I'm going to do something dramatic. Well, not dramatic. What's the name of Jonnet's friend?
Oh, Grace. Gracie O'Malley.
No, the other friend.
Jonathan has another friend. Oh,
burn.
She wouldn't be from the Tempest Armada.
Oh, okay. There wouldn't have been a recruit situation from someone.
We could recruit. Bring that in. I think, was that?
I think it's Johnny because I remember.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Johnny. Yeah, that's right. That would be Johnny.
Johnny's name, except it's Johnny.
Yeah, they brought in Johnny. I like that.
Mm-hmm. And then the last person, who would it be? Who's good for drama?
TNT.
Yeah, TNT drama. Kind of knows drama, so we could probably drag them in.
Oh, I would love it if one of the Uhura's crew has defected.
Wow.
Ooh.
I think that would be spicy.
Okay. Then who do you think that is? Who is? Because this is a major betrayal, because the part of this determines the payout that the Uhuru is getting from the handoff of this weave. So if somebody objected to the fact that the Uhuru was like trying to sell feather weave that isn't exactly standard feather weave, and it was like, no, I don't think the entire crew should benefit as much as you know, we've said they should benefit. That is big.
Mm-hmm. It's probably someone from B's ship, but not necessarily B. I do remember we put Kevin Klein on there.
And the audience has really grown attached to Kevin Klein, so.
No. Who? Gosh. I've forgotten
every person. So many orphans.
On this boat. Every person on this boat.
There's got to be someone named Young Sheldon.
Yeah. Certainly on B's ship, on the Hive. Yeah. Yes. Totally.
Yeah. Young Sheldon.
Young Sheldon.
Who he's so upset because he's 40 years old, but we knew the other Sheldon first. And we keep on calling him Young Sheldon. Mm-hmm. That disrespect will not stand.
And the other Sheldon isn't on the ship anymore. The other Sheldon is dead.
Yeah. Has
died a while ago.
Died honestly, first week. First
died
week on the job he died.
Before Young Sheldon actually joined up with the ship.
Mm-hmm.
But it just stuck, and boy, that's stuck in his craw. So that's who's there.
On the Uhuru, we do not do repeat names. No, thank you.
We do not.
We retired it. We retired Sheldon.
We don't do repeat names. We just have Bathroom Barry, Baritone Barry.
Or we qualify
a
before.
Surname.
Yes.
Oh gosh! So yeah,
the original Barry died the week he came on the ship.
Yeah,
gone. We couldn't use
gone.
It
yet.
Yeah,
his name was Barry. Barry.
Barry. Barry.
Because Barry is a long and storied surname.
You peeked over. You've gotten a sense of what the competition is going to be. Are there any other preparations before I start this event and explain how this is going to differ from standard combat?
In Jonnet's kind of slowly ensuing panic around this half cape, he's going to try a thing where he rips a little bit of his pants, so the fabric kind of like juts out a little bit, and then he's going to tie that to the end of the cape to maybe in some way, shape, or form, be able to like catch a little bit of wind. She's like, maybe this will do something. I don't know. And so that is something he'll be figuring out and probably rolling poorly on.
Cool. I like that. We will acknowledge that you have set that up. With that, I think you hear the familiar sound of people moving those horns in front of those wind tunnels. So sounding around the city of Ungoni is this beautiful kind of droning horn call. The crowd erupts outside as you can hear the music that accompanies this event starting up. Everybody around is like prepping for people coming out. And with that, like, I think we hear the thunder of, like, a big gong or something to announce that the competitors are supposed to step out onto the field.
Scotty Jacks.
Oh, no microphone?
He dropped.
James is having diarrhea. James had to go because he said, he wrote in the chat, I've got real bad diarrhea.
Oh.
It's very, very smelly.
Yeah, but he can't escape the Zoom box. So he's stuck in the Zoom box and he's got a good diarrhea.
He brought the computer into the bathroom with him to have diarrhea.
It's really good.
Wow, you're getting fast at that.
Too many beaver tails.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter at @CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing. You can find more great gaming shows over at OneShotPodcast.com. Jonet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at @TylerADave. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @Liz_... or on her podcast, Paired. Travis Madigo was played by Johnny O'Mara, who could be found on Twitter at Johnny in Briefs or on his podcast, Dilettante Ball. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my other podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this production was composed and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find Arnie on Twitter at @ArniePArrott. And you can find more of his work at atptunes.com. This episode was edited by Casey Tony, who can be found on Twitter at Casey Pony, spelled CaseyPoney, or on his own podcast, Neoscum. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Fiona Pup. The world of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and the card game Illimat, property of Together Studios. The game used in this production is a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system that was created by a talented group of game designers who were fired by a private equity firm owning Fantasy Flight Games. There are no kings. Take flight, heroes.
Health to the strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the sky.
In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.